Hey, True North, welcome to another episode of Sermon Postscript. We try and deconstruct and just discuss the sermon passage at hand with Pastor Jay. I just preached a sermon on dating, and we'll get into specifics, but yeah, Jay, you can take it away.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the message today, Huge. One of the things that I know can be difficult is talking about a subject that, you know, we may not have experience in anymore, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I think a lot of our church members and just Christians in general have such a convoluted view of dating just because of all the misinformation that's been taught to us both in our cultures and in our churches.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that I thought was a really good point that you were making was really talking about seeing people not as commodity, but as, you know, image bearers of God. And just one of the things that I want to kind of get your thoughts on is just the idea of, you know, how do you traverse this quote unquote dating marketplace, you know, as a Christian?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got that term with that. I mean, I fell so out of touch. I had to like literally do research on dating.
Yeah.
And there was that great piece in The Atlantic I really recommend people to read. I think it's The Dating Marketplace Got Worse. And they kind of outline really well that it is a marketplace. And I don't know, like, that's one thing I struggle with. I feel like I didn't parse out well enough. But I do think a part of it is just a mindset before walking into these apps. Because I think, like, you know, for us, when we're on Instagram, or even like, you know, ESPN, this is a weird side note, but like fantasy sports, for example, it's really easy to turn these players just into like numbers, you know? And it's like a small thing, but it's like, and because that type of mentality is so apparent in our society, it's like we kind of go into these apps, hypothetically speaking, because I don't know, like without this mindset of, wait a second, these are people. Like, and I think it's so smart that these apps kind of, they mirror like, you know, Amazon Prime, or these apps are trying to sell you goods. And I think it's just this mindset that you have to walk in with, like, it's not just numbers, it's not just goods, but they're people, and they're more than their bio, they're more than their profile pic, they're more than, you know, the witty DMs they send or the bad DMs they send you, you know. And I don't really have a good, like, clear answer of like what to do on these apps. I wouldn't go far enough or say you shouldn't use them, because I think it's just the reality that our church members deal with. But I do think a lot of it has to do with just being conscious of what you're swiping before you go in, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, and as you were talking on this point, one of the cultural kind of, what is it, commentaries that I think was really pertinent during your sermon, what I was thinking about was the episode of Master of None, where he has that whole episode about, you know, just like Tinder and just online dating. And just the tiredness and the work that is required. And I'm sure a lot of our members are going through that feeling as well. But just, you know, kind of bringing that back, then, like, what are some biblical principles that we can use to really think about dating and the other side as not just, you know, things to conquer, you know, but actually people to get to know and to see them as image bearers of God.
Yeah. I mean, I think moderation is really important, because I think the more, and it's just like Instagram, right? The more you're on it, the more it kind of shapes your view of reality. I think the same thing with these apps, that like the more, maybe the too much you're on it, like the more you're going to see these people as numbers. So I think moderation is one. I think also it's like placing more emphasis on the physical meeting than the DMs. It's really fun. Like, you know, I use the example of Hinge. It's really addictive to, like, you know, in a sense, flirt on DMs. And like, it's because there's this opportunity of like what can happen without any commitment. And I do think there needs to be more of an emphasis on like physically meeting and trying to get there before like sending too many DMs and virtually meeting. COVID may be a little bit different. And I also think, like, and I want your thoughts too, but like, I think the best place to find a romantic dating partner is your friends and your church members. And you know, that's, it sounds cliche, but like when these people are on these apps, like, you're only showing the best version of yourself often, or what you want to be. And you're not really seeing people for who they are, even on the first dates or the DMs. And you know, the reason why people are so apprehensive with, like, you know, me and you always, like, joke around with church members, like, hey, what about this person or this person? It's like, oh, like, I don't like this about them. But, like, that's them. And that version of them is eventually going to be whoever you find on this app. You know, it's their flaws will always still come out. And I just really think friendships are so important, because that you really know who they are without having to deal with the baggage of, like, courting and flirting. So I really think that's important, that maybe you should take a look at who God's placed you already physically around you, like literally physically around you.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about is trying to dissect and deconstruct the culture that we live in, where, you know, if you just take something as simple as Yelp, you know, like choosing a restaurant, you do so much research and you try to choose the perfect restaurant, and you get there and you have a dish and you may not like it, or you're comparing it with another dish that you had in another state or another city, or even like when you want to purchase something on Amazon, to be considered a responsible consumer, you have to read all the reviews and see how many stars it got. And even after you buy it, you sometimes have buyer's remorse, because there always seems to be a better item out there, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's translated into our dating culture, where meeting people on these dating apps almost is similar to just going on Amazon Prime or, you know, looking through Yelp. And we forget the human element, that dating is not just an item that's supposed to bring purpose and fulfillment in your life.
Yeah.
But Christian dating is really about preparing yourself to learn how to serve the other person. So, you know, one of the things that, as you were kind of mentioning, and we can kind of segue, is this idea of when people always kind of point out the negative qualities of potential mates, you know, and you know, dating potential, so like in that sense, what are some underrated qualities, or maybe qualities that people don't think about when they're looking for a mate? You know, what are some things as Christians that we should be seeking and searching for in potential dating partners?
I wish I could get more into this in the sermon, but I do think there's an overvaluation of, like, physical appearance often. You know, that's kind of cliche, but I think one underrated thing that people don't look for, and I'm lucky that I think I found someone that fits this, but parental values. Like, we're so concerned with what they can give us, but one thing that I think is really undervalued today in the marketplace, quote unquote, is, like, will they be a good father or mother? And that's a whole different set of values that oftentimes isn't as attractive to the modern Western person. But if you really think about it, like, and this is a big generalization, I'm not saying every married couple is like this, but most likely your spouse will be a mother or father much longer than they're just your spouse individually, if that makes sense, right? Yeah. And I think that's key, because, like, you know, every marriage, the hope is, I think, to turn into a family, and you know, that's not true for everyone. But I think because of that, I think look for people that can foster kids well. I think that's so undervalued. And I think that's one of the most, like, underrated qualities of people that, you know, like Moneyball, like, you know, like the things that people don't look for, but they're out there. Like, man, they're going to be probably your mother or father of your children. And look for that, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, and again, we're not saying that physical attraction should be not a priority. Yeah. You know, there's definitely... chemistry and attraction is something that's inevitable, you know, we can't force somebody to like someone when they're not attracted to them, right?
Yeah,
totally. But yeah, I also find that when you see people or when you meet people and you see that there's, like, a chemistry in terms of how well you work together, you know, and that's why, like, serving in the church is helpful as well. As you serve in ministry and as you, you know, have a community in life with one another and share life with one another, just as friends or as church congregants, you get to kind of see the service aspect of this person, you know, and seeing if someone has a very servant heart or if someone is compatible in your serving style, that might be a good indicator of the way that you'll be able to work together as husband and wife as future parents. And I think a lot of times you find someone like that at church or in your friends and you say, oh, that's a good person. for my friends, you know, but it's like, but not for me, you know. It's always like, oh, this person would be good for her, or this person would be good for him, you know. And but individually, we always have like this unicorn that we're still searching for, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's really important, because I think when you're serving a church community, that's actually more of your true self coming out, you know. Like, anyone's gonna jazz you up if they're interested in you, right? And I think we value too much of that, and I wish people would view more like, what is their character with people around and with service around outside of just you? Because of course they're gonna court you if they're interested in you, to just kind of see them from a holistic perspective, which I think is really good.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that you also mentioned in the sermon was talking about how in order for us to truly love our neighbors as you know, as God loved us, that you have to grow in being able to love God with all your heart, mind, strength, and soul. Yeah. You know, can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, and you know, it sounds so cliche, like, oh, love God well and everything will work out. And it's not like the, oh, if you love God well, you'll get what you want type of deal, you know? But I think when you set the right loves, St. Augustine always said this, that like living well is just ordering your loves well. Mm-hmm. And that when you love God primarily, then everything kind of falls into place. Like, I think one thing he says is like, if you cheat or like gossip about someone, your loves are disordered. Like, you're loving yourself or the thrill of gossip more than that person that you're gossiping about.
Yeah.
And I think that bigger concept applies, especially to dating, that I think so much of what we are concerned about in the church isn't just about the act itself, but it's such a larger meta heart issue, that oftentimes the reason why we fall into sexual immorality, which we'll get into, the reason why we start fighting with our spouse or dating partner, or break up really horribly and it's a horrible breakup and someone leaves the church, is because our love for God wasn't primary, and we allowed or thought that dating or this romantic interest could take that hole away. And I think it's just that size of a hole is just too big for a person or an idea to fill. It has to be filled with God.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I did want to kind of go on a tangent is, what are some toxic dating practices that has been perpetuated within the church that maybe we need to address and maybe kind of correct?
Like, I really would harp on this. I think the breakup culture is really toxic. Like, you know, this is speaking more personally. Like, I always, when people break up, there's always factions within the church. Like, you know, the girl faction, the guy faction, usually just like by their friends, and the life gets messed up. Like, the communities get messed up, and it's, I just, that's not the picture of the gospel that I get really frustrated with. And I think that's why I mentioned, like, I think breakups are actually more important than the dating relationship itself, because that's when the gospel actually becomes true for both parties in the community. I think that's one toxic thing. I also think, like, you know, I talked about it. I don't know if it's that true in True North, but like, especially guys over spiritualizing the relationship, like, oh, like, you know, and I talked about this, but like, you know, God told me that like, you're the one, and that's cringe. But also, that's kind of abusive to say that you're some sort of prophet or messenger.
And, absolutely.
Yeah. to use God for your own like passions. Like, I think that's really abusive. But yeah, I feel like you might know more too. I'd want to pick your brain.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest ones. This idea kind of like, oh, I've been praying and God told me that that you're the one for me, you know, because then that, you know, immediately puts the other person in a situation where it seems like then they are being disobedient to God, obviously, if you have the right state of mind and some maturity, then you'd be able to recognize that. But there are cases where some people may not recognize that, you know, and especially if the guy or the girl saying this is seen as more spiritually mature, then you almost kind of like are strong-armed into agreeing with that opinion.
It's like arranged marriage spiritually almost.
You know, I also think there is some toxic dating principles that the church has perpetuated, in the sense that we use dating as almost like a pseudo marriage, when in reality, I mean, dating is something that happened in the last 70 years, right? Yep. And you're making this commitment I mean, you're not making a real commitment because it's not like contractually or spiritually or legally binding.
Yeah.
But then you perpetuate living as quote unquote pseudo married people.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to kind of solve that, but I think it goes back to having the correct view of what dating actually is, which is, you know, number one, learning to love the other person the way that God has loved them. Yeah. But also finding yourself in your relationship with God. And I don't know, I'm just kind of meandering here, but I think there's like a toxicity of Christian dating, especially where it's more serious than it actually is, you know? Whereas I feel like in secular dating, sometimes people have a better understanding that, hey, we're just dating. But in like Christian dating, it's like, oh, once you're dating, it's like, oh, then the next step is engagement, you know? Like, and if you don't make it there, then you failed.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. I don't know if I mentioned this in the sermon or not, but I really want to push, like, especially for one thing about Christian dating is breaking up should totally always be on the table.
Yeah.
Because I do think what you said is really true. And I hope if you're listening, like, if you don't think that if you come to me or Jay or a leader at True North, it's going to be like, well, you can't mess this up. Like, that's totally not the notion that we hold. And I think dating is within this realm of Christian freedom. And to place these, like, especially biblical, like, type of pressure, it's just wrong, I think.
Yeah.
As a pastor. And I do think it's time to grow and learn and to even break up well. I think that's the best way to learn from these relationships too. So
yeah,
that's just my two cents.
I just think about all the people who got married because they felt guilty or pressured into marrying that person just because they're like, oh, we've dated so long and we're Christian and, you know, I feel like that is, can be a very dangerous topic when we kind of look into it. Yeah.
Don't ever force chemistry. I think that's just like a better way to put it. And it's not biblical to force it.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. I think this is something that the counselor mentioned last week about singles and dating. You know, I think when it comes to marriage, you're really making this covenant to serve the other one, you know, your spouse selflessly.
Yeah.
But I think in dating, there is room for a little bit of selfishness.
Yeah,
in that you know you're looking out for yourself and trying to grow yourself and seeing if the other person is someone that you do want to marry and coming to the conclusion that they are not, it's not a bad thing. You know, it's actually a good thing if you come to that conclusion. It's a good thing.
Yeah, because you can't do that when you're married.
Exactly.
So I think I think she put it really well. If you weren't able to listen yet.
One of the things that you know you're mentioning and especially for married couples, you know, people. Like me and you who haven't been in the dating game for over, you know, a decade. How can we be a blessing to our single dating members? And how do we provide wisdom? How do we provide guidance? And how do we provide support to this life stage?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, this is a really important point I really wanted to press, that like dating is communal, especially in the church. I think that's one thing that scripture is clear about dating, that it should be communal. And the only way to do that is top, bottom, bottom, top, where married couples are talking to dating couples. And, you know, if you're married and you're listening, it's like, oh man, like I need to be this guru. I need to be a pastor and pull out these verses to do that. And I think more than that, it's just sharing life, like inviting these people into your homes, you know, maybe when COVID's over. And like, if you have kids, I think even them observing how you treat your children, how you raise them, is a way to kind of implicitly grow wisdom on them. I think even just sharing meals and just talking about just life and like, you know, asking them how they got together, sharing your own stories, even sharing your own like biggest fights and just asking them, do you have any questions? Like, and we're not coming at it that we have any answers, but we've traversed this road together as a married couple, and you know, every married couple can attest to this. You've learned your fair share of lessons, however mature you feel. And I think that's so key, because for dating couples, you can't find that unless you're in a community with married couples. And like outside of the church, where are you going to find a group that's like this, you know, that's bonded not by age or singleness, but by ultimately Christ. So I think just sharing life, I think that's the biggest thing. Don't worry about spitting out verses or being a guru. Just open up your homes and lives to them.
Yeah, definitely agree. You know, and one of the things that maybe I can give an advice on what not to do, and I'm guilty of this too, and I think a lot of married couples are guilty of this as well, is when they do talk to dating couples, you know, sometimes the advice is, hey, just get married. You know, just get married. You know,
yeah.
And I think it kind of goes back to that that culture of error in the church, where it's just like, hey, just marriage will solve all your problems.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you guys are fighting? Just get married then. You know, like, yeah. But I think there needs to be some wisdom in knowing that being in the single life stage is also a gift. And so providing, you know, good, solid, biblical, wise advice, as opposed to just trying to kind of herd everybody into the married life stage.
I think that's a matchmaker of some
sort. Yeah. And you know what? I'm the worst matchmaker. You know, like every time I try to, you know, hook people up, man, it turns out so bad. So don't come to me. But my wife has a perfect record, you know, of matchmaking and marriage. So if you guys really want some advice, talk to Christina.
There you go. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah, you know, the last thing that, you know, I wanted to talk about, and you were kind of mentioning this, is, you know, within the dating culture, there is no real distinction between Christian dating culture and secular dating culture nowadays. You know, I think we've kind of moved away, and rightfully so, from the toxicity of purity culture. But at the same time, there does need to be a holiness and distinction as believers in the way we conduct ourselves, especially when it comes to sexual relations outside of marriage. What are some ways that we can help guide our dating couples to fight sexual temptation and the, you know, the pitfall of getting into a physical relationship outside of marriage?
Yeah. I think the beginning phase of it is just allowing sex to be part of the, maybe not normal conversation, but the conversations that we have. You know, like I do a podcast. I remember my friend was like, whenever we talk about sex in the church, it's always like, it's coming. The seminar on sex is coming, right? And it's like, it's so overemphasized. And we think, oh, and I remember talking to a lot of people about this and like, hey, you should preach a sermon on this because I see it. And I think the pulpit is necessary, but it's not at all the final answer to try and solve this, right? I think this specifically is a communal solution. And I think a lot of it has to do with allowing sex to be part of our conversation with married couples and dating. And even in community groups too, you know, as awkward as it may be, I'm not saying to make it every session about that, but to make space for it and not make it taboo. Because I do think a lot of the problems with sexual morality have come with this overemphasis of denying sex in the church, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember a pastor put it really well, like if you have a hole in the fence and you walk past, like you're not gonna bat an eye, but if you say, do not look, obviously you're gonna look. Yeah. And I just wish we could be more genuine about that conversation. And in that conversation, don't just say like, oh, sex is bad, right? Because that's a very simple and elementary way to get out of it, but to really parse out, you know, especially as married couples, like, well, why, in your opinion, should sex be reserved for marriage? And, you know, if you struggle with that, that's something that you can, if you're married, parse out with reading scripture and talk to other married couples. And yeah. I think that's the way to solve it, really, rather than just me and you, like, thumping our Bibles on the pulpit. But, I'd want your opinion, too, because I feel like you have good answers, too.
No, I think what you're talking about is really kind of the foundation of the issue. Where we as a church have made the topic of sex, and especially, you know, if the majority of us are Asian Americans, the topic of sex is something that, you know, you stay away from. It's taboo, you know, but and it's not even just this idea that we need to talk about it on the pulpit. You know, I think there is a sense of false vulnerability and false authenticity when topics like this are only spoken on the pulpit.
Yeah.
And not spoken outside of it. You know, like we can talk about like greed and money, you know, like twice a year. And then we can talk about like sex like twice a year and then never mention it again.
Yep.
You know, which isn't helpful either. I think it's the idea of understanding that God has created us as physical beings with physical desires.
Yeah.
And not seeing that as like this perverted, you know, immoral, sinful desire that you need to continue to suppress until you get married. You know, like this is something that a topic that we should be discussing more in smaller groups, in conversations, you know, even the getting past the awkwardness of, you know, married couples and dating couples talking about sex, you know. One of the most awkward moments when I do premarital counseling is the topic of sex, you know, in and within and outside of marriage. And I still get really awkward talking about it with these couples, but I think it's absolutely necessary for us to describe that God has given us this wonderful gift of physical pleasure.
Yep.
The way that, you know, the way that children are born is through this pleasurable act.
Yeah.
And it's not something evil. It's not something perverted, but it's something that should be, you know, enjoyed in the confines of a covenant of marriage.
Yeah. I mean, there's even a book in the Bible that's just about that, right? That like sex is good in marriage.
Yeah.
And I wish people would know too that the desire is not bad. I think there's a shame to even talk about it, because it's like, man, if we even talk about it to our leaders or community group leaders or pastors, like something's wrong with us because we're struggling. Look, if you're not struggling with this, then you probably shouldn't get married, because there's no attraction in that relationship, right?
Yeah.
So it's natural, and it's something that we should talk about. So don't feel ashamed to bring it up, even if you're in some sort of act of sexual immorality. I think it's we have to get rid of that shame culture in our church, because I think that it just doesn't solve any issues.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like whenever it comes to like these temptations and you keep it secret, most likely you'll fall.
Yep.
You know,
totally.
But when these temptations are things that you're able to fight together with a community, you know, as like iron sharpens iron, you know, two sharpen one another. You know, and what is it like? The chain of two is easily broken, you know, that I don't know what that proverb exactly is, but I think having that type of attitude about sex and this topic and sexual temptation is definitely needed.
I totally agree. Cool. Well, thanks for listening. Again, we try and have this every Monday after our sermon, just to kind of debrief and dive a little bit deeper, but we hope you're blessed and enjoyed that, and hope to see you next week.
All right, thanks everyone, see you guys next week.